Hey guys, welcome to Hope It Helps. Today's guest is Patrick Hoffman. Patrick is the COO of Hillsbridge Global Water, a company that specializes in water treatment technology. He is an expert and a leader in waste and wastewater management, which has earned him international awards and nominations in the sector. During this episode, we discuss the global water crisis, the importance of raising water awareness, how water is recycled, and the financial impact it can have on businesses. And the last message he wanted to share is think about water and look at it from a different perspective. Please join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Patrick Hoffman.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. So Patrick, me and you got connected, you know, through my father. So shout out, Dad.
Yes.
and he, I remember when he told me about the work you do, which mainly revolves, you know, around water. You've been in that industry for almost 20 years, and from Luxembourg to Dubai. I did my research, look at the project, some of the projects you've done, and nowadays I think you're starting to hear more about it in the news, about like water shortages or water awareness is something that's really starting to grow. I don't know how bad the situation is, so that's why I think you'll be able to give us a better idea. So I just wanted to talk to you basically today about water. Why is it so important? Why do you do the work you do? And, you know, what's the future, you know, looking like over the next, you know, 10, 20, 30 years? But before we get into everything, Patrick, why don't you give all of us a little bit of background about yourself and we'll take it from there.
Well, with pleasure. Yes. My name is Patrick. I'm from Luxembourg, as you said, and yeah, since now 2009 in the UAE. And my background is in environmental engineering, which I did also my whole life. Actually, I started with in solid waste management and only switched around 12 years ago to water.
Okay.
Yes, before it was just only solid waste. But solid waste management, there was so much competition, and I met some people from Luxembourg during the inauguration of the Luxembourg embassy in Abu Dhabi. And then we spoke about water, and I thought water, that is the future, because we have only a finite resource of amount of water on Earth, and we need to manage it well.
Yeah.
And as you said, yes, nobody spoke about it so far, but that time we thought, okay, we need to do something, and more on a decentralized level.
Decentralized.
Yes. That means at source. I was also in waste management, I was always focusing on segregating also at source. That means everybody does some small efforts.
Sure.
And to get the materials, the recyclables, as clean as possible. So for an easier recyclable and a valuable product.
You know? Yeah.
So making out of waste a valuable product.
Mm-hmm.
And the same idea was then born with water.
With water?
Yes.
Okay.
Because water is, I think, the transfer of water is enormous. I think it needs to be always there where it is needed.
Yeah.
And then when it is needed, it is wasted and needs to be transported to be treated again.
Yeah.
And huge distances and so on. And luckily, one of our guys, he was an expert since the 80s.
Oh, wow.
In a very special filter.
Okay.
And with these filters, out of ceramics, really high quality filters, we said this is the heart of the equipment we can use to go decentralized for water treatment. Yes.
So when you talk about decentralized for water treatment, does that mean without government intervention and having a private sector solution? Is that what that means?
Yes, but we had the idea was we tried two different markets. The one was from the agricultural market, but more on the energy side, like biogas plants, because they have also a lot of water involved in their sludge.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was the industrial.
Okay.
We did not touch now the governmental side, because government side is like, you have like the big players, even like Veolia and B6.
Mm-hmm.
So they are all the operators, like governments who operate big sewage treatment plants.
Okay.
But there is a gap in between, like the small water filters you have at home for the tap water, which are the market is saturated with mostly Chinese products.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next step is to the sewage treatment plant.
Okay.
To clean the can of water. And in between, there was nothing.
Okay.
And that's where we position ourselves.
In that middle.
In that gap.
Okay, yes. Interesting. Okay.
And nowadays, a term which is more familiar maybe, not only in water, But in the financials, it's the circular FT, the circular economy.
Yeah, the circular economy approach. Yes. Yeah,
and that is what we are doing too. The decentralized means the circular water management, because you can treat it within a small circle.
Yeah,
the more restricted, the less you need to transport the water.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
Yes. So if you have a single building or an industry, you can take that wastewater instead of dumping it directly to the sewer. We can catch it, we treat it, and we give it back for reuse.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. So, so I have so many questions, because when I was doing my research, I was learning about how, first of all, I never thought of the relationship between business and water, and especially a business that maybe not necessarily is in, like, for example, shipping or something like that, that I would like, oh, okay, that's on the water. Okay, that makes sense.
Mm.
And looking through your website at Hillsbridge, I learned a lot about, oh, wow, okay, if the supply chain of maybe making that product takes this much water and you have less, and then that's going to trickle down and affect so many other things. And I was like, that's so I've never thought of that relationship. And I think in general, people wouldn't associate the two. But I wanted to come back to something you actually posted about this last week, and I thought it was interesting. You were talking about how water awareness has risen, but net zero, the net zero carbon emissions approach, that is, you know, the spotlight. The spotlight is focused on that rather than that. So two questions. First of all, let's start. Why do you think that right now is still in the spotlight in comparison to water awareness?
But I think... The question is, I think it's a very interesting question and very important. So thank you for that. It's in the spotlight maybe because of politics.
Politics.
So somebody gives incentives or pushes companies to move in a certain direction. And from the green economy, waste management and everything, it shifted into everything has to be related to carbon emission because of climate change. Climate change was... Since years is gaining momentum, is increasing, is in all everybody's mouth. Everybody knows. Everybody's talking about. Media is talking about it, and so it's a huge media event business. Basically, the climate change, you know, activists and conferences are held and global agreements and so on, and that's why the net zero. It's just a term which developed over the climate change because climate change is all related to carbon and our emissions. And it's only, what was it, about 5 to 7 years ago, PricewaterhouseCoopers, luckily, they also started pushing towards the water.
Mm.
And even then, it was not in the media. The media did not report about it or speak about it. But they said, asking the CEOs of the top companies in the world, water was among the 5 top business risks. And as you said, nobody's aware of it, but we all said water we need to drink. How much do we need to drink? A liter or two per day, something like that, because we got a lot of stuff from food. But liquid like this, I said, with a liter of water per day, drinking is fine. So that's not too much. But if you are buying one pair of jeans, you are consuming already 8,000 liters.
Wow.
For one pair of jeans.
Wow. Now,
so it's the industry which sustains our lifestyle, where the water is actually needed, and... in return also polluted, because to treat stuff, water is the best solvent in the world. So it can transport anything, it can dissolve so many things, and so to produce stuff, you need a lot of cleaning, you need a lot of cooling, you need a lot of heating, and so there water is used and polluted in the same time, and in large quantities, because I think small industries, that doesn't exist anymore. So they're getting bigger and bigger, and so does it. And then in the same time, the environmental regulations are getting more stringent, which is also then again, that's politics again, to help companies to move to a more sustainable way of using water.
So do you think, so it sounds like the main reason, or at least from your perspective, that net zero and carbon emissions are in the spotlight is because of the crazy media push that has happened globally, and that has trickled into different areas of, you know, the world and businesses.
Yeah, that is like a marketing tool used by industries and to say, okay, we are green, but the industries, they don't do it just for fun. And also not because of only law, but they also got incentives. Or they are restricted to, they need to do something that in return to getting something or to getting a permission. And it's a brilliant marketing tool, of course, the green economy. And people are, especially now, people are getting more and more aware. They are choosing eco-friendly products over, or more and more eco-friendly products over less eco-friendly products.
Yeah.
That happens with hotels. If a hotel chain has better environmental programs, the people see it as a higher value than if you have an hotel who doesn't care, which is hardly existing anymore, the big chains. But it's a marketing tool too.
Yeah, it's like that green, it's like a badge, you know, that badge of approval. You know, I'm part of that, part of this, you know, this initiative, part of this green thing. Do you think that all, even though maybe water isn't in the spotlight yet, and it should be, do all the things that companies and industries are doing and people to tackle the net zero, does that have a trickle-down effect, a positive effect on water, or are they really two completely, these are two completely separate things?
No, it's not at all. They are linked.
Okay.
Because even with the sustainable goals, water is part of most of them. Because if you need to transfer water, you need energy. And energy you need, again, is related to carbon, because to produce energy, you know, mostly oil, is, and so we are again in the carbon cycle. And if you need to transport large amount of water, you need again energy. At the same time, there is even a lot of energy stored inside the water. And that is also what we are tackling, or what we are also focusing on, not only to clean the water, but to extract, so to say, the energy which is stored in it. Because if we're in buildings like this one here, think you are doing laundry, washing machines, the showers. So you are heating up water, so energy is now in water because it's hot. Then it goes down the drain.
Yeah.
And where is the energy going? The heat which you consumed, just into the environment. So if we are now treating the water at source in the building, you can reuse this heat for other purposes.
That's so interesting. I had no idea because when you were talking about energy and water, I'm like, so I didn't fully understand. I'm like, okay, that makes so much sense.
This is known as the water and energy nexus. So they are interchangeable, interlinked. They cannot without the other, it doesn't work.
Yeah. And so, do you think that? Or let me ask you this: what do you think needs to happen for water to become? For water to be in the spotlight over the next 5-10 years?
Well, a lot comes from the politics again.
Politics drives it that much?
Because it gives motivation to the industries to do something.
Okay.
If you have now, if you have a steel company and you need loads of water for cooling purposes, and so the steel, that's why the steel companies are mostly just close to a lake or close to a river, so they can withdraw water. If they are not allowed anymore to withdraw water, so they need to do something.
Yeah.
Because they cannot just say, we shift now the industry in another country or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's why on this side, plus, of course, awareness, like media plays a role that everybody should be aware of the importance of water. And that's also why I focus a lot on to give awareness in... we have some conferences as a speaker.
Yeah.
And I don't go into conferences doing technical speaking, like technical presentations about how good we are or how brilliant we have developed the system. No, but just to raise awareness about, like, simple examples, day-to-day life, how much water do we actually consume to sustain our lifestyle, you know?
Yeah.
That is something which people, that remains in their minds. And then they start seeing water completely different, you know?
Yeah.
And if many do a step towards reducing the water consumption, like for instance here in the UAE, of course we have hot weather and you need to take quite some more showers than in Europe. But the water consumption is around 550 liters per head, compared to like in Germany or in Luxembourg, I think it's around 150 to max 200 liters.
Wow.
Or a single hotel room here, a 5-star hotel room, they have often about two, I think 2,000 liters per day of water per room or per guest. I don't know anymore.
Okay.
That was the amount of water I needed, and thus nobody is realizes it because nobody is being told.
Yeah, yeah.
Informed. Awareness is so important.
That's very, very true. Those numbers are staggering to me. I can't, because I was thinking. So I had someone on the podcast recently, and we discussed. You know, we're talking about climate change and recycling and stuff like that. And I was asking her the question, and I'm going to ask it to you. Does every little bit count from an individual's perspective? Mm-hmm. Like, because you know, there's some people that recycle, there's some people that don't. But the people that recycle truly believe that they are making a difference. And mm-hmm. then there's others that feel that this minor thing is not going to make that big of a difference. So, in your example, if it's mm-hmm. taking, if I reduce, you said it's about 550 per person per day. Let's say if I reduce that to, let's say, 500. Okay, that's great. But you just told me that it takes 8,000 liters to make one pair of jeans. So comparison, it's even if I did, on the balance of play, it's my contribution is almost negligible. So
that's
true. What would you say?
That's true. Yeah, sometimes it's, you might think it's, you're a bit fooled because what one thing, but if you have many ants who can build fantastic useful, and then now this tiny animal, you know, if everybody contributes, nobody's going to change the or save the world, but at least contribute. It's always about contribution and passing on the awareness of the importance of how to manage water in future. And this has done, again, everything is somehow linked. That's also circularity.
Yeah.
Because, as I said already, if people get aware, they also choose companies who or suppliers who are also equally concerned about the environment, mm-hmm. you know, and if they can reduce their water consumption, again, like a paper mill, for instance, you know, if they can market it green that they have now, that they recycle their water, and because it's also the public who can put pressure on the industries.
Exactly. So it's so it seems like the track is politics enforces laws.
Mm-hmm.
Industries have to react. This raises awareness for the general public, and mm-hmm. then impact. That change becomes like significant.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a lot of work to get through to make.
Yes. That's true. But the thing is, you know, on the other hand, you know, sometimes we also create regulations, and you might think, okay, why? But we are also a growing number of people on Earth, and everybody also needs a job.
Yes. So
the more regulations, the more jobs need to be to set it in place, to control, to follow up, to monitor, to implement.
Yeah, exactly. So,
yeah, we all need to earn our bread and butter.
That's true. So we've talked about how the flow of change that needs to happen, the flow of the sequence of events that needs to happen for mm-hmm. a big change to occur in this industry. Now, first of all, when I was doing my research, I learned about something called water stress, you know, nationally. I'm like, I'd never heard of that. And not surprising that this region is the highest because we are in the desert.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. One thing, though, that I found interesting was this. So, look, I really don't know anything about this. So I'm like a blank slate.
Mm.
So there was a statistic that I think 44% will treat the water, and even a smaller percentage would reuse the water. So maybe there's something that I don't understand. Why would I go through the effort of treating water if I don't have the intention to reuse it? Like from my perspective, if I'm treating 50%, then my reusability should be 50%. Otherwise, what am I treating it for? So could you tell me like a little bit more about that?
Yes, I think there's on two levels we need to discuss there. Personally, why do you do this? Because it's true. That's why if you treat water on site, there must also be a use for that water.
Sure.
Because there are industries or there are hotels who say, okay, I can treat, you have now, let's say just a number like 500 cubic meters of wastewater per day, and we can treat 80% of it,
okay.
And then you can reuse it, but where? where can we use it? Because not everywhere you can. There's an hotel which is, for instance, not doesn't have its own cooling tower for district cooling, so which would consume a lot of water, but it doesn't have. So where to use it? Maybe in their laundry. Nowadays, the laundries are not anymore in the hotels. They are getting into bigger centralized laundries.
Mm-hmm.
So where to use the water? That's true. Sometimes there's no use. So the only thing you can do is you can dispose it of or recycle a small amount to reuse it. But that's it, because you cannot use the, or you could, but it's by law and also not, it's forbidden,
mm-hmm.
To use wastewater to clean it on site and to reuse it as potable water. That is forbidden.
Okay.
It's also understandable because, imagine something happens.
Yeah.
And then a company would be responsible of somebody having health issues. And how can you find out where this health issue is coming from? Is that really because of that recycled water, or is that because he had some food which was bad, or
yeah.
Don't know. You know,
yeah,
where does it come from?
True.
But if it's not protected by government, then the private industry, they have the shortest breath.
Okay.
So yeah, in terms of reuse, so first of all, you need to have it. You need to be able to reuse it actually on site. That's
okay.
True. Secondly, if you are not treating the water and you just release it into the environment, which, by the way, 80% of wastewater globally is still not treated, but just released into the environment.
Okay.
But this wastewater has pollution from microorganisms, bacteria, viruses, heavy metals. You know, there can be anything in it which is harmful, not only for humans, but also for the environment. And since water is circulating the whole planet in the cycle, wastewater ends up in the environment. In the environment, we have a filter, natural filter, that is our soil. And the soil and even lakes and rivers. So the environment cleans water, but very slowly. And okay. Technology makes it fast.
Okay.
But then a technology, you can remove and treat the pollutants, but in the environment, they will accumulate.
Yeah.
Then if you have accumulation in a river, and every water ends up in the river, in the sea, in a lake, in even the contaminated soils, you have a problem, because then you are contaminating ourselves again. Look, for instance, in northern India, there are massive amounts of arsenic in water, which is harmful to the environment, to health. And people are now suffering because the soil is full of arsenic. You have agriculture. The plants absorb it. You eat it. When it goes into the river, the fish will absorb it. We eat the fish. So we are contaminating ourselves.
Yeah.
If we are not polluting it and removing the pollution.
Okay, interesting. So just to recap, so the two areas to look at is, number one is, if I treat it, do I have, how can I reuse it? That's one area. And number two is, how should I treat it anyway? If I have no plan to reuse it,
That is more on the government. So if you have now in a developed country, you have centralized sewage treatment plants, which can treat the water through a big tunnel system of pipe system. And if you are not in developed countries and the industries, they have nothing to dispose. They cannot dispose of the water except in the environment. There, it would make sense to treat it and to reuse it to minimize the pollution.
Yeah. So when it comes to, when we talk, just so everyone understands. So when you're saying I'm treating water, does that mean I'm taking it from wastewater, or in other words, and wastewater is something, for example, if I just clean the dishes, whatever water flows down after that, that would be considered wastewater, dirty water, polluted. So treating water means taking it from that to, is it drinkable? Is that what that, when I'm saying, oh, we're treating water, does that mean taking it from this to something that maybe people can consume? Or what does that mean when I'm treating water?
Yeah, you can treat it to, or we also can treat it to any level of cleanliness you need.
Okay, so there's levels to it.
Yes.
Oh, that, okay.
Now, for instance, if you have a car wash, the water which is recycled there and reused doesn't need to be that clean. It should not have no solid inside, which will damage. But you should not drink that water. So if you process water for industries, every industry needs different kinds of water. A laundry needs a different water than the steel industry, a paper mill, it is different water, you know, so everybody has its own, but still they're all not potable water. Well, you don't need to have potable water to have this processed water. But there are industries where you need to have even cleaner water than potable water.
Mm.
That needs to be ultra clean water, where everything is removed. It would not be good for drinking because it will suck or dissolve the minerals out of your body into the water, and then you will have a hard time and health issues. Yes, because it's so clean. If you are now in microelectronics, for instance, they need such a clean water, or in cooling towers, because it's like if you're cooking at home your spaghetti, pasta, and you have salt water flowing over your stove, you have these deposits,
yes,
minerals.
Yes.
Even if you have normal bottled water, you have minerals inside. Mm-hmm. So these minerals, they will crystallize as soon as water evaporates.
Yeah.
So some industries, they need to have these minerals removed. So that is so clean water that, yes. So that depends. The quality is depending always on for what is it, for what purpose is the use, for what purpose is the water used.
And I would assume that the more refined it is, the more costly it is.
Yes, yeah. Every treatment stage, of course, adds more. More technology. The more technology, the need to purchase the equipment, and you need to maintain and run the equipment.
That's I've never heard or knew that water could be so clean that it would actually negatively affect my health. I would think, it's the cleanest water. Great. Yeah, I'll drink. It's super clean.
Yes, if you have a herd, you can buy in store, for instance, the distilled water. That is too clean. You cannot really not drink it.
Yeah.
But if you are doing the ironing only of your clothes and you have mineral water, you will have deposits on the iron box.
Yeah.
And with distilled water, you won't have because there are no minerals inside.
Yeah, yeah. So coming on to, I wanted to kind of come on to, because you've been in it for quite a while. So for example, I know in, I think it was 2017, 2018, when South Africa had Day Zero, I remember seeing that on the news and they were saying that we're going to run out of water. And I'm like, that concept of running out of water has never existed. I've never even known that was possible. I've never experienced that, you know, knock on wood in my life. But now I know it seems that we're moving towards a significant water crisis globally.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, has that risk always been there? Or has it, for example, in your time in the industry that you've seen over the last 12 years, gone from, it's a problem, but, you know, it's manageable, to, you know, fast forward 10, 15 years where we are today, that, oh no, now we're getting into, you know, it's starting to really shift in the wrong direction.
Yes, true. But majorly, the thing is, we have this finite resource of water on Earth. And the thing is, the population is growing and people are migrating to the cities. So urban areas are developing and rural areas are reducing. So, and that's why we need more and more water on a small area. And in these areas, usually there's not enough water there because it's just because of population growth.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, 12 years ago, it wasn't that much of a problem, or because it was already a problem, but nobody was really talking about it. That's why I think, as I told before, that PricewaterhouseCoopers was already doing a study 7 years ago and said the top five risks, is one of it is water.
Yeah.
So it's because of population growth, and extrapolating the numbers of growth means we will very soon run into a serious problem of the water.
Yeah.
Not only because there's a shortage of water, of clean water there, but also about the quality to treat the water.
The quality to treat the water.
The quality of water. So there's not, because 80% are still not treated of the water. So it is polluted, and this is the contamination will remain.
80% is a crazy number. That's all. It's you know, like, if only 20% globally is. What do you think the reason for that is? Is it because it's just either there's no incentive for me to treat, for my business to, you know, do anything about this water, to put that extra cost to treat it? Or is it that I don't have necessarily a reusability case for this? So what's the point?
It's also the economy of every country.
Okay.
And how countries prioritize this issue of water.
Yeah.
Because if they have other problems to solve first to develop their country into a more manageable one than water, is usually lining up far behind.
Yeah.
Plus, I came to know, funny thing, when I go back to Luxembourg, you know, they say, in Dubai or in the UAE, the Middle East, you have only one person who's ruling, and in Europe you have then the parties. I said, yes, but the thing is, the politicians, they are elected for 4 years or 5 years, depending on the country. So they want to act in a way which makes them popular to be re-elected.
Sure.
But yeah, people, rulers in this country, they can set long-term goals.
Yeah.
And you, in water, you need long-term goals in order to make a change, not the short-term goals. And with politicians, it's often the case that it's short-term.
Yeah.
Because 4 years is not a long time.
So when you say long, when you're talking about long-term, how long are we talking?
As long as possible, because you like cannot... 10 years. 10 years is still medium term, but you have that goals like at least 20 years, 30 years.
Wow, okay.
To look into the future.
Wow.
Because you just need that... The migrate people are migrating to the city, so cities are developing, and accordingly, that doesn't happen overnight. And even in 10, 20 years, look at Dubai, it was developed very, very fast.
That's true. Yes, it was.
But it still took 10, 20 years to grow to that point. Like, when was Marina built? 2006. Now we are 23.
It's been almost 20 years of Marina. Yeah. That's crazy.
It's more, yeah. So there was nothing. Now there are massive amounts of things.
I wanted to come on to drinking water, right? So, correct me if I'm wrong. This is from what I guess I've heard or read, or I don't know. So, to produce drinking water, I'll take water from, for example, the sea. I take it to a treatment plant. I treat it. I remove the salt, and I convert that into drinking water. And then, but apparently, I don't know if this is true. The whatever salt deposits, kind of like what you're saying, the minerals that have been now taking out from it to make it drinkable, that is that pumped back into the ocean? And does that have a the more I'm doing that, the more I'm salting the ocean, the more that's going to affect the ecosystem and the wildlife and the fish? Is that true, or have I missed something?
No, that's perfectly true.
Oh, okay.
Because that is unfortunately, most of the water on Earth is saline, so it's salt water.
Yeah.
And to remove salt, nowadays there are 3-4 systems, but there's one which is the most efficient one, like the reverse osmosis is called, and that removes all the salts, most of the salt from the water, so to make it potable. And then you are left with this concentrate. No. Yes, and this concentrate you need to dispose it off somewhere. You cannot put it on land because the vast amount of quantities are produced daily, and
so you have like salt mountains.
Yes, we would have. Yeah, and that there's not enough space available. It's rather inefficient to pump water back on the land, so it gets infiltrated into soil, which is also not the solution. So they have to pump it back into the sea, and unfortunately now in the UAE, now we have the Persian Gulf, which is not an open sea; it's a gulf. And that's why the salinity of the Persian Gulf is increasing year by year.
Okay.
And it's already now, I think, 10% more saline than like the Indian Ocean.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
And so it's so fun. It's so, I don't know if funny is the right word, but it's so interesting how everything's a cycle. Okay, more people are moving to the city. Okay, that means I need more water. Okay, that means I need to desalinate more water. Okay, that means I'm putting more salt back into that. And then, but now there's more salt here, so it's going to cost me more to do that again, and it's going to get hard.
Yes.
I don't see a very positive...
No, it's a vicious circle. That's true.
So what makes you passionate about water? Why? What is the reason? You know, you've been going to conferences. I know you give talks and give awareness, which is fantastic. And I think we definitely need more than that. But what makes you passionate about it?
I think since I was a child, me and water, it was like one.
Okay.
When we went for holiday, I was the first in water, no matter how cold it was, and I was the last one out. You know, sometimes my lips were blue. I also like to dive. I like the environment. I like nature. And so that, and then comes the fact, so yeah, the environment, nature, water, that was fascinating for me. And then comes the fact about, as you were also now astonished about some facts about water and
had no idea,
and the whole, the complexity of water, and to understand really water, and it's, it looks, it looks like, yeah, it's water.
Very simple, basic.
But it's so complex, and then to understand the water, to understand how water behaves when you add chemicals, when you remove them. So it's, as an engineer, you are always, you know, I am interested in that, and that makes me fascinated. So combining the water, just, I used to love it being pools in the sea, so, and then understanding the water and to make it used for beneficial use, to help contributing
sure
a bit. And on the other side, as an engineer, I'm also liking to explore, to discover new things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm also in Dubai and not in Luxembourg, because many people ask me. I started actually in 2009, just a small side story. When I came to Razakheimer, I also saw, that looks a bit village-like here.
Mm-hmm.
And people were asking, what are you doing here? You know, why do you come to Luxembourg? Stay there. I said, no, but I like it. I like the challenge. I like to develop something, to help, to create something. And that I can also find the same in water, because it, especially now with the circular management of water,
yeah.
So we developed our own technology, and that's where I could also develop the process, experience with the equipment, and so the creative mind. So that is, I think, these three cornerstones which make me so fascinated. Yeah. It's not easy to survive in the market, but you know, it's as I said, if you do it with your heart, then it's difficult to get itself then.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's it's interesting. So there's your history with water, which you've always loved. So
yes.
There's that feeling. And then there's the complexity of it, which intrigues you as an engineer, and the ability to develop something that long term is for the benefit of everyone.
Yes.
In essence.
Yeah.
In essence. Yes.
Yes.
And so you've mentioned these circular economy approach a couple of times. So could you tell us about Hillsbridge, the work you guys do, and about this specific approach? What is it? How is it different from, I guess, the non-linear way things are done now?
With the non-linear thing, okay, yes, but that's that is now a big question. So just thinking where to start. About the process, but technology. Hillsbridge and the linear way, let's say it like this, it's just, yeah, you use it, you dispose it off, and then it goes somewhere. If it's treated or not treated, that's the linear way. The huge sewage treatment plants, they have a physical and chemical process to process the water, which is sometimes needed.
Okay.
If you now go decentralized in a circular way, so you go locally to an industry or to a building, to a community, you might not need the biological and chemical processes, which is used in the big sewage treatment plants. But I try to do it to add as less as possible things to the water.
Mm.
But we are focused on removing the bad things from the water.
Yeah.
And not trying not to add chemicals or whatever, and try also to simplify the process as much as possible that it is used for industries. There are also mini sewage treatment plants available. That is nothing new, which is very beneficial depending on if you have food industries which have a high organic load. You need to have these package plants which have a mini sewage treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
What we can do that too, but the main thing which we were focusing on and what makes also us different from other competitors, first of all, our knowledge and expertise.
Knowledge and expertise.
We are, because now, since the water market developed now recently, and all of a sudden you saw many companies trying to jump into that boat and to also get into the market to make some profit out of it. But without only relying on standard products and standard know-how, we developed now over the past 7-8 years on site. We made a pilot unit, and we took really time to develop the process and to better understand the wastewater of industries and the needs. And so we don't have the standard products, but we are more innovative.
Mm.
And because we have a filter, which we don't produce, we are like a car manufacturer, which gets equipment from the market and we assemble it into a process.
Gotcha. Okay.
So the heart of our process is a ceramic membrane, which is used since 1940s, but it was in the nuclear industry.
Oh wow! Okay, yes,
that was to enrich uranium. That was that's why it is so famous in France. And then it developed into the food and beverage industry. And every time we have a liquid to separate, which is difficult to separate, the ceramic membranes were the best because they're heavy duty. In wastewater industries, you know, it's also highly contaminated water and with fluctuations. And so it's really, the equipment must be really tough to operate efficiently. And other competitors, they just used, for instance, these plastic membranes, which are known since also decades and very popular. And they are really good, but for lightweight or lightly contamination, let's say like this. They cannot handle now with fluctuations, and they are cheap, but they are rated operation costs are very, very high. And that makes us difference because we have the know-how since 1984 with these membranes, which were never used in the environmental sector, but they were used, water gets now so precious that it makes sense to use them nowadays in water, in the environmental sector, these membranes.
Okay.
Yes. And then the whole process, it's nice if you have a bunch of equipment lining up, but somebody also needs to manage that. And so there needs to be a brain behind it. And that's why we also have we write our own software. That's not really software, the program. Mm-hmm. We know how to, that the system should operate from input to you get your clean water.
Yeah.
Everything is regulated by a machine which regulates the process automatically. And that is our two big differences. First of all, the hardware machine, this ceramic membranes. And secondly, the process management software who can efficiently treat this water.
It's interesting when how products that were made for such specific things, for example, you see things like tires from the technology they use for like tires at NASA on the moon, you know, I've seen companies now that like are taking that approach and using it in a different industry in a different way. So it's really interesting how something that had I guess no initial use in the environmental sector has become something that is so powerful in, you know, in that sector.
True.
And I think you hit nail on the head in the sense that there's a lot of, you can find a lot of similar products in anything in the world, but there's a difference between getting the product, assembling that product with others, and then strategically and operationally putting that all together to get you that end result. And that is a pretty hard thing to do.
Yes.
And when it comes to water and how you guys, I guess, your approach. So do I come to you and be like, hi, Patrick, I would like to, I see water as a risk to my business, and I would like to, you know, address that and reduce my consumption or treat it or reuse it, whatever the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
What is that like flow of, like, what would you be asking me in terms of like to get, like, what information would you need from my end for me to help you get that done?
Yeah, that is another part which separates us from many other competitors. That first of all, we are engineers. We understand water, which is very, very important. That's crucial to understand water. And to also to understand the industry means you need to combine, okay, what does the industry really need and how can we manage that water will be so that they can efficiently reuse the water.
Yeah.
So we do, first of all, our expertise, and we take the time to do a feasibility study, if it's beneficial for the client or not. And so in order to not to waste money for the client, he can say at any time, okay, we can use it, but this will be approximately your cost, and it's environmental friendly. It is cost-wise, that might be not possible.
Not so friendly.
Still, the client has done the say, yes, I want to go on. I know I don't want to go.
Yeah.
Other companies, which we realize now over the past years, they try just to sell a product. Yeah, we have it. We have our technology. You got it. It's quickly, blah, blah, blah. It's cheap. You won't find cheaper. Yes, there's one cheaper. I got it cheaper to you. So mm-hmm. they were competing on price rather to sell it, to sell something and not to deliver a solution.
Yeah.
And we are more taking the solution approach, which gives value to the customer, should put him also, and it reduces the risk because we saw so many companies investing already in two different technologies for the water recycling and both failed.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
And it's, sometimes people learn it the hard way,
usually
yes, and you have an industry, and if you are good in your laundry or a general manager of an hotel, or even the director of engineering, they know their business. They know how to operate a hotel. They know how to operate a laundry or whatever industry they are, but they have no. They just use water and dispose it off. So how are we supposed to sell something? And they have no idea, is it good or is it not good? So their decision-making was based on, okay, that's cheap, we'll take this.
Yeah.
To minimize risk, but that was immediately money thrown out of the thing. So
yeah, sure.
Even if you see their proposal, there are companies who have a proposal of 3 pages, and then you read the specifications in the limits where this plant can operate, and you say, this water is nearly clean.
Yeah.
this clean water can be treated by that plant, but we are talking here about wastewater, you know? Mm. But of course, the business owner, they don't have an idea. They need to be educated.
Of course, yeah.
And that's also why we consider not anymore only selling this, not selling the solution. We can still offer that, but we also try to lease the technology. It means we are taking the risk, and then the industry, because they have no idea what the water is, to minimize their risk, we just sell them. Or charge them a service.
Yeah, you license it up.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a very smart.
So that's then combining then, and that made it even more interesting, but also very complicated for me because it combines the environmental sector, water, which I know, with the financial sector, where I'm not so much into finance. So I learned also quite a lot over the past years because it was a financial exercise and a technical exercise right now and in the same time. You know?
Yeah.
Yes, but it's also the future because everybody should do whatever he's best in. And
I agree. You know, stick to what you know, and usually that's where you're going to find, you know, success.
Yes.
And it's so interesting how I think it's a great idea that you guys decided to lease that out because that opens up so many doors. But I think you made a good point that there's people are experts in their respective industry, their business. But when it comes to, for example, water, which is where you guys are the experts, there's a lot more that goes into understanding it than just, oh, that product is better than that, or that's cheaper than this, and being solution focused rather than product focused, I think is something that's so important, especially with something like water, I feel is incredibly important.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, just have a few more questions for you. So first of all, I wanted to ask, when it comes to recycling, we have now, I think everyone understands what the term recycling means in general when it comes to waste.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think we really understand it when it comes to water. So when you say recycling water, does that mean that the water I just used to clean my dishes gets cleaned and then gets reused? For example, maybe the next time I clean my dishes I'm going to be using that same water. And number two, as individuals like myself, like you, how is the only way for us to have an impact, or in other words, to recycle water, by just reducing how much we use of it?
Yes, of course. Yeah. If you reduce the water, that's of course the first priority, because everything which you don't use and you don't need to treat.
Yeah, that's true.
And there's more than for others. You know?
Yeah.
And, if you reduce by 20%, we can add 20% of population.
Yeah.
to reuse the water now on an individual level, like in households, I think it still would take time that you can. Or maybe there are some states in the US, I think two states, where you can reuse the water for non-potable use, even for potable use from sometimes. Mm. But like showers or swimming pools and dishwashing, this. But then the houses also need to be equipped with that. because you need them different. It's like nowadays you have the wastewater line is separated from the toilets, is separated with the grey water, which is the remaining wastewater. It comes even so far that yellow and brown water is separated. That means from number two and one, number one when you have a toilet. Even these can be separated, but it goes too far. But the same you need then to apply also for the water reuse, because if you open your kitchen tap, if it's recycled water, you should not now drink it because of the law. So it gets complicated to reuse it inside the house. In certain areas, yes. And that is the beauty in the now in the UAE, for instance, or in the Middle East, where it is hot, and you have everywhere where you have cooling towers for AC. And so you can reuse, collectively reuse the water from a whole building, and which in return makes the operation cost, let's say called operation cost of a building, less. Because you can use and treat the water on site.
So how does it work in, because I was thinking, but there's countries in the world, for example, there's countries in the world where you can drink the tap water.
Yes.
And that's fine. So is that, is the water just being treated on a national level? Is that what allows people to be able to drink straight from the tap water? Yeah. For example, here, I know we can't here, but like if you go to like Switzerland, for example, you probably can't.
You can drink the, here, you can drink the tap water. Okay, it's treated with chlorine and so on. So it's, not the best one, but you can drink it. You won't die from it.
Yeah.
You don't get the disease, you know?
Yeah.
The water treatment is generally not the problem. But again, that's an interesting fact which puts recycling in, decentralized recycling in the spotlight. In, because where does it come? For instance, in any country, water is treated, made available for drinking. The water at source where it is produced is clean. Then, for instance, here in Dubai, they were produced in Jabal Ali.
Yeah.
But the people in Deira, they also need to have water, which is just the opposite side of the city. So you need to transfer water from Jabal Ali to Deira.
Yeah.
And then that goes to pump stations and pipes and so on. And over years, there are leakages. Or if you have pressure pipes, and they remain clean. But then you have the storage tanks, which are on the roof, which and the building maintenance, where they don't maintain the tanks very well. These plastic tanks, you cannot imagine what you see inside. Dead lizards and sands and so on. And everything comes through transmission and storage of water where the contamination is added.
Yeah. So the source... Oh, how clean is the actual water where I'm getting my water from? That's going to have an impact on everything else, on the treatment, on the transportation, on everything.
It's because of the transportation of water where the treatment
You're saying through the transportation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because you have, you don't have, now here, in the, for instance, you can, in your sink, the water tap is stainless steel. But where, and the pipes, don't have stainless steel pipes underground to transport the water. They are concrete or glass reinforced plastic. And then there are manholes, so dust can't come here. I think you see how dusty it is. And then again, the storage tanks, which dust comes in, and animals are attracted to these tanks too, because water, animals love water too.
Sure, yeah.
So they are around. Yeah, and that's how the water, before you come, it's through the transmission where the impurities are added.
Yeah, and I never knew, I only learned about this recently, how I never thought about pipes. And I never knew about the importance of having good pipes because of how much water is lost globally from bad piping. And when I heard that, when I read that statistic, I can't remember what it was, but I'm like, what? Like... Mm. Because when I think of a leaky pipe, I'm like, okay, it's imagine it's like this. And, there's like a little drop. But so I'm like, it doesn't look that bad. But I'm guessing if you take those little drops and multiply it by the world, that's a big number.
Yeah, there are two issues, two sources of wastage. And a very small one, as you said, as in every household, there are even technologies available which monitors in the household if a toilet is running. And there was a guy I knew. He made one study about how much water is lost just because of your toilet, if it's running a bit. And it's a tiny amount of water. But over a year, that adds, you spend quite a lot of money to because of these water leakages. But then where the serious problem comes is the infrastructure, which is, again, where government needs to handle.
Yeah.
Like check funds in US, the infrastructure is horrible because nobody, not only for the water, but also bridges and here and there. So there's a lot of issues in infrastructure.
Yeah.
And go to London. You might think in UK there's a lot of rain and they don't have any water problems. London has a water problem and will get even a worse water problem. And some do also to an old infrastructure.
Mm.
And when there are leakages there in the transmission of fresh water, so you leak it, you transport water, which goes back into the soil. And with wastewater, also leakages goes back into the soil and pollutes the environment at the same time.
So when it comes, so is everything you just described, is that what water, I guess, water security means? Water security means is putting infrastructures or systems or solutions in place to tackle everything you just...
No, this is... that's not water security. Water security...
Oh, that's something different. Okay.
Yes. No, so the water security means you need to... That is the whole management of water to make water available and in a good quality to the population.
Okay.
That is water security.
Okay.
And even in case of a breakdown, that the population still has some water for a couple of days or weeks to live with. That is water security.
Oh, okay. Yes.
But the other one is just preventive maintenance costs, to ensure to minimize the loss.
Yeah, to minimize the loss.
Minimize loss and minimize also that water gets uncontrolled into the environment.
Yeah. So I know we were talking about how we've touched on briefly about the global state of water and, you know, how, you know, people are, as you mentioned, people are moving to cities. That means there's more buildings, there's more construction. Like this, the way the world is moving means that the need for water and the accumulation of it is just going to increase, you know, along with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is more of a psychological question, but it's interesting how, for example, I think us as people, we're very bad at planning or like being proactive about something. We are more reactive. For example, COVID, you know, before COVID, no one cared about that. Or not that they didn't care, but there wasn't a global like wake up like guys,
yes,
like, health is the most important thing and so on, whatever. And now when it comes to water, we've talked about how it's a finite resource. This is the challenge, at least for me, in my head. So you're telling me it's a finite resource. So the word finite means limited, right? But I also know at the same time that most of the world is water. And if I go look at the ocean, I'm going to see like the water never stops. So in my one part, my eyes are like, oh, this is endless. And then my brain's like, oh, but this is finite. So does that mean, my question to you is all water treatable and reusable, or is that not the case?
Yes. It's very, very nice, interesting question. Or fact, and you say, you are absolutely right with the psychology, because nobody really thinks about water, especially, although, no, let's say it like this. People from developed countries, they don't think about water because they opened their tab and it was there. I was the same. Even nowadays, it's very, you only realize, oh, dear, I did again. Oh, they are not switching on my water because I went to a new apartment and I have to wait until tomorrow. Then you realize how much
valuable water is.
But most of the people on Earth, they have a problem with getting that water. So it's for those who have it, it's a psychological effort. Just, well, how kind of water, what is that? It's there, you see. And then in terms of treatability, yes, every water can be treated to remove. Okay. That is, some might be really difficult to treat, but then there are always ways to do it. Because, yeah, I think it's a fun fact is, or fact to just also, if you just figure it out, psychology wise, is like I think we all have, I'm 100% sure, we have drunken already the pee of dinosaurs because it went back, you know, every year. So many people use it as things, but it's just, it's like that. You know?
Yeah. That should be a quote.
Or, sure. Go to space. The space is now space mining and going to Mars and everything. Mm-hmm. It's another part where the focus lies on. And if you are going there, even ISS, how do they cannot have they don't have alien water delivered to the doorstep?
No, they don't.
But so all the water, including the pee, is recycled on board, and they drink it.
Yeah, that's true.
So they are they have this amount of water. Nothing goes to waste. Yeah. Everything is treated and recycled and reused.
Mm. And I think something that's very important is that I think it's important to have an awareness of the water situation, but I don't want to know anything else, because because psychologically, if I know that this was recycled from sewage water, I'm gonna I'm not buying from this company anymore, which it very probably might be, but as long as I think sometimes ignorance is good to be.
That's true. But you know why if you are having surgery,
mm-hmm.
the most difficult patients are who? The surgeons themselves, because they know what's happening.
True. They have all the information.
Oh Jesus, I don't want to do that.
Sometimes I think it's better not to know.
Yes, that's true.
Patrick, for my last two questions, these are questions I ask all my guests.
Okay.
So first of all, looking back at your life, either personally or professionally, when I ask you the question, what are you most proud of, what would you say?
Oh, good. About the way I am and my sense of exploration and my good heart, and which is often taken advantage of, but yes, that is. And then, of course, my parents who developed me to be like that. Yes.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're just very proud of who you've become or who you are. Yeah, and I think that's if more people would feel that way about themselves, mm-hmm. I think, people would be a lot happier. That's a very nice, beautiful thing. And for my last question, Patrick, mm-hmm. what is the message that you'd like everyone to take home with them today?
Hi. Yes. Of course, to think about water and to see it with different eyes.
So you heard it. You heard it there, guys. Think about water and look at it from a different perspective.
Yes.
Patrick, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for coming on the show.
I thank you.
This has been so interesting for me. When we started the conversation, I knew nothing, and now I still know nothing, but I know a little bit more.
Yes. It's all about raising the interest, or it's like a movie. An interesting movie is so you make the topic interesting, and then.
It's something I really wanted to have this conversation because I like having conversations about topics that either I know nothing about.
Mm.
And usually after I speak to someone who's an expert in that, it makes me think. It broadens my, perspective. So
that's very true.
I was very excited to sit down with you today and, have this conversation. If anyone wants to, get in touch with you, connect with you, how can they do that? Let us know.
I'm on LinkedIn. I think that's the easiest way to connect.
Yeah.
There through Hillsbridge Water. So my name just Patrick Hoffman. Unfortunately, there are many, many, many people who call Patrick Hoffman.
By the way, when I searched you on LinkedIn, I was like, wow.
It's quite a lot. Yes. All through you.
Yeah.
You have all my details. And
yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. Patrick, thanks so much again for coming on the show, man. Guys, to everyone listening, as always, please like, share, follow, and subscribe to the podcast at hope.it.helps with two S's. And as always, guys, hope it helps. Peace.
And thank you, Khalid.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you,
Patrick. Thank you.